Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And thank you for joining us on this Friday evening. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat is on the air. Brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. We're also brought to you by Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. And by Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn card. Just $99 at Blackthorn. And with that card, you can save up to 80% off rounds of golf at Blackthorn. That includes cart and also some good specials at the Blarney Hole. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. We're live at Four Winds Field on this Friday evening as the South Bend Cubs get set to open up a 6-game homestand. Three against Lake County, three against Fort Wayne. Lake County and South Bend will meet tonight at 7:35 on WSBT Radio. Pre-game coverage starts at 7:20. The captains are the Midwest League affiliate of the Cleveland Indians. South Bend coming off winning 2 out of 3 in Midland against those pesky Great Lakes Loons. Coming up on the program this evening, we're going to talk about one of Notre Dame's football opponents this fall, and they are reeling right now on the defensive side of the football. We'll tell you which team we're talking about and the players that are right now not a part of their football team. We'll get to that coming up in just a couple of moments. It's June 1st. That's an important day on my calendar because that to me is the day you can officially open up your South Bend Tribune and take a look at the Major League Baseball standings, because, in my opinion, we're past the small sample size stage, and we can start to take the standings seriously. We'll take a look at the National League this hour, the American League next hour. Also coming up at the bottom of the hour, Tom Noy, lead columnist for the South Bend Tribune, and, of course, covers Fighting Irish basketball. We'll bring him aboard to talk about what is now an official Big Ten ACC Challenge matchup at Purcell Pavilion between the University of Notre Dame and the University of Illinois. My five question of the day. We're going to project ahead a little bit, and Eric will answer which five Notre Dame incoming freshmen will have the best chance to leave Notre Dame early for the NFL draft. So this is still 3 years away, but I think this gives us an idea of the who's who in this class. Is that fair to say?
Sounds good to me.
You're just going to agree with me.
I'm just going to agree with you on everything today except for baseball standings.
Well, we lived through the Josh Booty segment yesterday. Have you heard the promo?
No, I haven't.
Jerry, you may have to call that up. We may use this in this segment if you have it handy. So stand by, Eric. We'll get to that. We have a little promo we made up.
So did I get the Booties mixed up? Josh or John David?
Does it really matter at this point?
It doesn't matter. It's as bad as the blue hose.
Presbyterian
Blue Hose
University.
That's their nickname.
That's why Eric referenced that.
And Darren and I had very different images when we thought of what the mascot might look like.
Don't put me in this. This is all you. You've dug the hole. Don't drop me in that hole. I'm good.
Well, I was
thanks.
Putting you in a hole that would include stockings.
Yeah. All right, so we'll have that coming up next hour. What an NBA Finals game last night. I mean, you talk about stuff in the last minute. There was a lot of stuff going on. We got rapid fire, and we are going to play back the A.J. Pollock interview. The former Irish standout baseball player, now with the Arizona Diamondbacks, was recently on Sean and Sharpley show, Leprechaun Lunch. We're going to play that back at around 6:45 here on WSBT Radio, and that leads us into South Bend Cubs baseball tonight on 96.1 WSBT. Eric, let's start with some college football news that affects one of Notre Dame's opponents in 2018. One of the more interesting road matchups for the Fighting Irish in October is a trip to Blacksburg to take on the Virginia Tech Hokies. Very solid football team last year. A good showing recently at Notre Dame Stadium against the Fighting Irish. And Virginia Tech made news today with the announcement that a pair of cornerbacks will not be facing the Fighting Irish in October. We begin with Adonis Alexander. He's a 6'3 corner, high-end player, no longer with the football team. Apparently, it has to do with academics. So Alexander is out of the mix. Also, cornerback Jeremy Webb suffered a left Achilles tendon injury. He has had surgery, and he is done for the season. How about a little perspective, Eric, on this Virginia Tech secondary? I think they were counting on Alexander and Webb to be a big part of what they wanted to do this year. Without those two, they're scrambling.
They are scrambling.
We can make a trade with them. We got plenty of corners.
Yeah, that's true. You can trade corners. It's difficult because that was going to be kind of a rebuilding part of their team anyways. They lost the Edmonds brothers. Both of them were drafted very high in the NFL draft. They came out early. One was a defensive back. One was a linebacker. But the one that was a defensive back could have shifted over to corner. He played primarily safety for Vautech.
Okay.
But Adonis Alexander and Jeremy Webb, they were counting on those guys to start for them. And I was reading Andy Covers, Virginia Tech, for one of the Virginia newspapers, I forget which one, but I was reading his story, and he said, you know, they have their entire linebacking core has really zero college experience, but they are more concerned about their cornerbacks now, given these developments. Even though there's some kids that have some experience, they don't feel like they have high-end corners, which would certainly help a Notre Dame passing attack that needs to improve this year. But you know, Bud Foster schematically is very good. He's very good at adjusting. We saw that in the second half of the Virginia Tech game a couple years ago in Notre Dame Stadium. But this is a real blow for Virginia Tech because you can't really, I mean, other than moving somebody, you can't really account for this happening on the first day of June. You know, you can't go recruit somebody else. I think that the grad transfer market would be pretty dried up for a cornerback at this point unless you're really gambling on somebody's character or health.
Yeah, Webb was a guy who transferred into Virginia Tech, also a 6'3 cornerback that will not play this year due to the Achilles injury. So Justin Fuente, the head coach of Virginia Tech, has his work cut out for him, and Alexander apparently is going to try to go to the NFL supplemental draft. And the last time an NFL team used a supplemental draft pick, you have to go all the way back to 2015, a fifth-round pick by the Rams. So Adonis Alexander is a bigger corner, a high-end player. We'll see if he's going to be a part of the NFL supplemental draft. And when you take a supplemental draft pick, you lose a regular NFL draft pick. So we'll see if an NFL team takes a chance on Adonis Alexander, but there are two corners down for Virginia Tech. And reading one of the stories about Virginia Tech, you know, there's a lot of concern about inside linebacker. They don't have anybody on the roster that's had any significant time, Eric, at inside linebacker. So you talk about some glaring holes in the defense. Virginia Tech, who had a lot of high hopes coming into this year, they are really scrambling at this particular time. And they've got a lot of work to do before this season gets underway. And, of course, the Fighting Irish football team will go to Virginia Tech on Saturday, October 6th. They'll have a month of football under their belts trying to figure out how this is going to work. But this is a huge development in a game in which I think if we sat here right now, wouldn't we call it a toss-up?
I would say Notre Dame would be the slight favorite,
okay.
But I think given the venue and everything, I think Virginia Tech is very dangerous. Terrell Edmonds was the safety that I was thinking of the Edmonds brothers. He could have slid over to corner because they have a few safeties. They're kind of the opposite of what Notre Dame was last year. They have safeties. They don't have corners. And Edmonds is a guy that has the speed. He was the 28th pick of the first round, and his brother Terrell was the outside linebacker. So, you know, and I'm not sure that they saw both of those guys going early. I think maybe Terrell and not Tremaine. Tremaine is 19 years old, but he was eligible for the draft. And so, wow, 19, 20 years old, played last year at 19. So, yeah, they're going to have, I mean, that would be a really difficult hit for any team to take. I mean, two starting corners and two corners of that caliber, and to go and just throw somebody new in there. You're right. I mean, you're a year or a month into the season, but that doesn't mean the talent experience is going to kind of gel there. That's a really rough go.
The most veteran corner on the roster right now is junior Javon Quillen. 11 games played, 5 tackles, 1 pass breakup. He was a regular on special teams and played mop-up duty on defense. Now, they do have an early enrollee that apparently did some great things during the spring in Jermaine Waller. But as we know, you never know what you're going to get once the games start with an early enrollee, especially at the cornerback position. They have a couple of other guys, but they really didn't do a whole lot. Caleb Farley was expected to make an impact at wide receiver this year, so now he may go back to corner. That just shows you where Virginia Tech is right now.
Well, you know, again, Notre Dame had the opposite problem last year. They had good corners and they had inadequate safeties, to be blunt and to be blunt. So Notre Dame wasn't able to do everything they wanted to on defense because of the safety position. But you flip-flop that with Virginia Tech, and you don't have corners. Well, what is that? How does that hinder you? Well, you can't play press coverage if you don't have good corners, Darren. So you're going to have to give a cushion to the Notre Dame wide receivers. You're also going to be able to blitz less. You can't put those guys on an island. So you're going to have to play more zone to protect those corners until they end up being seasoned. And even then, you know, they can't afford another injury at that position. So that's a very difficult thing for them to deal with. Again, I think better in June than in late August, but still, I think that's going to be a real tall task for Virginia Tech.
You talk about the Irish being a physical running game, play-action team. There's a guy, or I should say there's a team with some guys that could be very susceptible to some play-action. You remember Chase Claypool in the spring game flying down the right sideline for a long touchdown? That could be in play against Virginia Tech. All right, so two corners for Virginia Tech. They will not play this season. One hopefully going to the NFL, the other out
right
for the year with the left Achilles tendon surgery.
But Adonis Alexander, I mean, he's off the team because of academics.
Correct.
Yeah, that's why he's going to the NFL.
Yes.
He didn't just decide,
oh,
hey,
no,
I need money.
No.
Yeah,
I established that earlier.
Yeah,
I just didn't go back with all the details again.
Right.
So that's the situation with Virginia Tech and their defense right now, especially at the inside linebacker position. It looks like they have 3 glaring holes on their football team, and some teams are going to be licking their chops, I think, against that Virginia Tech defense. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you, Sports Beat at 519 on 96.1 WSBT. Just a quick note, this is kind of for fun. On the golf show, we're on every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on WSBT Radio. John Foster from Warren Golf Course at Notre Dame, Tim Firestone from Blackthorn join me each Saturday at 8 a.m. to talk golf, and we have spent a lot of time talking about the United States Senior Open, a major championship on the Champions Tour coming to Warren in June of 2019, and we're going to talk more about that tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. with John Foster. But a fun note today, when you think ahead to next year, the 2018 U.S. Senior Open is right around the corner, and a very familiar name has qualified for the Senior Open. It's baseball Hall of Famer John Smoltz. Smoltz is a really, really good golfer, 51 years old, tried to get into the U.S. Open field and made it, and he shot a 3 under par in his qualifying round and needed to go into a three-man playoff for one spot. And a former PGA Tour player, Brian Tennyson, got knocked out on the first hole of the bogey. And then Smoltz was able to beat the other competitor. So John Smoltz, a Baseball Hall of Famer, will be in the 2018 U.S. Senior Open. That's really, really cool for that tournament. And I hope he makes it next year. How cool would it be to have John Smoltz playing at Warren Golf Course at Notre Dame? Little insight there on some golf news. Now let's go to... Oh, yeah, it's June 1st. Let's take a look at the Major League Baseball standings, because to me, this is the day where you can start really taking a look at the standings and evaluate where your particular team is. So on this June 1st, we're going to spend a couple of minutes in this segment on the old senior circuit, the National League. I know, Sean, you and I, we all had the Nationals, the Cubs, and the Dodgers winning their respective divisions. They were the winners last year. And
boy, weren't we original.
Well, it's awfully hard to pick somebody else, to be honest. Yeah. But right now, you take a look at all three teams are making a little bit of a push, especially the Nationals and the Dodgers. L.A. was way off the pace. Arizona has tanked. And all of a sudden, the Dodgers are back to within six games. The Cubs are four back in the Central. And the Nationals very quietly a half a game back in the National League East. So let's start with the East. Atlanta 33-23, a half a game in front of the Nationals, a game ahead of the Phillies, and four in back of the Mets. So of those four teams, who are you buying, who are you believing in, and who are you saying will fade off into the sunset as the baseball season continues?
Well, I had to do those power ratings maybe a week and a half ago, and I had Washington higher than what they're, because I thought they were going to come around, and they are.
Karnak, you were correct.
Yeah, they're showing that. I just don't think Atlanta's going to be able to hit as well as they have for the entire season. I think that's going to catch up with them. So I like Washington in that division. And I like the Phillies kind of to stay in the race. Jake Arrieta has been pretty good for them.
He's been awesome.
Yeah.
Aaron Nola has been the ace. Arrieta has been ace number two. That's a pretty impressive top of the rotation. Velasquez is okay. They may have to go with another starter at the deadline to help out. But I think the Phillies are going to hang around. I'm a little more pro-Atlanta. They're young. They've lost Ronald Acuna Jr., the young phenom, to an injury for a little bit. Ozzy Albies is just a really fun player at second base. If their rotation holds up, I think they can hang in there. I still think the Nationals are going to eventually win that division. But I think Atlanta and Philadelphia are definitely in the wild card mix, if not the division. But the Mets, remember that great start they got off to?
Yeah.
They're now 27-27, and I see them as an under 500 team like I thought at the start of the year. They've got some really interesting pitching, but they can't stay healthy. They've lost Harvey. He just wasn't the same guy. They traded him to Cincinnati. Noah Syndergaard's on the DL right now. Steven Matz had a finger injury last time out. They don't have enough hitting to withstand more injuries in that starting rotation. So I'm down on the Mets. Let's go to the National League West. Colorado 30-26. They lead the way. Arizona 28-27, a game and a half back. The Dodgers in San Francisco, six back. So who are you buying that will stay in the National League West race?
Okay. My standings have the Dodgers in San Francisco four back. Am I screwing that up?
Did I not say four back?
You said six.
I'm sorry, I meant to say four.
Okay. The Dodgers, I saw Clayton Kershaw's getting checked out again today for an injury.
Yes, huge news.
But I think eventually the Dodgers are going to be able to win this division. Pollock's injury is going to play. Do we know when Pollock's coming back?
It was 4 to 8 weeks, and I think he was hoping closer to the four-week side. And I think he got hurt in the middle of May.
So another at least two.
I think that's fair.
Okay. I think it'll be a great race. I think I had picked San Francisco to be...
You did. A wild card.
Yeah, the wild card. And I'm not sure how well that's going to hold up. But I could see everybody but San Diego being involved in this. But I think the Dodgers eventually, if there's not a serious injury with Kershaw, they've just let L.A. hang around in this. You know, they had Arizona stayed hot, it would have been really difficult for the Dodgers to get back into it. But I just have a feeling they're going to end up in the playoff.
Well, Jeff Samardzija has been bad this year, a 6.56 ERA. He's now in the DL with a stiff right shoulder, so who knows what that's going to mean for him.
Johnny, it's still lower than Holland's ERA. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, Johnny Cueto's been on the disabled list. Madison Bumgarner's been on the disabled list. So the fact that they're 4 under 500 with that rotation, that's pretty impressive. But I think they sail off into the sunset. I think there's a really good chance Colorado or Arizona wins this division if Kershaw is not going to be healthy. The Dodgers aren't the same team. They lost Corey Seager, their young shortstop, to Tommy John surgery. Puig has come on lately.
How's Turner been since he's been off the DL?
He's actually been good, and I don't know if it's coincidence, but they played a whole lot better since he came back.
Okay.
Maybe it's coincidence, but they've been playing better. I think it's a three-team race, but I think Colorado and Arizona both have a chance to take that division away from the L.A. Dodgers. Now we go to the NL Central. Cubs were 5.5 back at the All-Star break last year and stormed to the division title. Milwaukee right now, they have the best record in the National League. They are 36-21, 4 ahead of the Cubs, 4.5 ahead of St. Louis, and now 6.5 in front of Pittsburgh. So again, who are you buying that's in the race in the National League Central?
I like Milwaukee a lot. I think they need to eventually make a trade for another starter. I love their bullpen, and I think
it's really good.
Yeah, I think that's where they have an advantage on the Cubs and the Cardinals. I think those three teams are all going to make, they're all like in a long distance race, and then they get into that kick and they all three kind of go together. I think they all three will be really strong in September with, I'm going to say, Milwaukee winning it. I think the Cubs are, I think this Yu Darvish thing is going to be the thing that holds them back. They're one star short. Now, again, they could make a deal, but I think Darvish is going to be kind of the stick in the mud for them. I like their team. Other than that, I know Hayward's playing better right now or hitting better, and I don't think Pittsburgh's going to stick around. I think they're going to be a little bit better than 500 and be pesky, but I don't think they're as good as those other three. I think all three of those teams are going to have a good September.
To me, Pittsburgh will be under 500 and they'll ride off into the sunset. They're starting to do that right now. You look at the three other teams, Brewers have the best bullpen of the three. To me, St. Louis has the best rotation, but the Cubs might have the best group, which is kind of strange. I know, right. I mentioned that the other day.
I know, but Alex Reyes went on the DL just with a lat strain. Fortunately, it wasn't an arm injury. But they're going to get Molina back soon, and they're going to get DeJong back sooner than
Carlos
later.
Martinez.
Yeah.
Rehab assignment last night. So they're starting to get some of their guys back. They're actually very fortunate to only be 4.5 back with all the injuries that they've had and the bullpen collapsing and the offense being very hit and miss.
And Colton Wong turning into a double-A player.
Yeah, and Dexter Fowler hasn't been good until lately. So they've had a lot of negatives, so they're kind of hanging around. I'm not quite sure they can overtake Milwaukee or Chicago. But the Cubs are going to be a playoff team. I do think, like you, the Brewers have a really good chance to win the division. They can't beat the Cubs, though. At some point, they're going to have to at least split some games here,
yeah,
with Chicago, because that's really the difference right now. As the Cubs have beaten Milwaukee, it was something like 7 out of 8 or 8 out of 9. They had 5 shutouts in April. So Milwaukee's going to have to play a little better to really make up some ground against the rest of the National League. But I do think the Brewers have an awfully good chance. I felt this way for a couple of weeks. The Cubs are a whole lot more susceptible to be overtaken in that division than I would have guessed at the start of the year. Darvish is a big reason why. Chatwood leading the National League in walks. There's some deficiencies right now on this Cub team, especially in their rotation. The bullpen's been really good, but they lost C.J. Edwards to the disabled list. So let's see how they look over the next couple of weeks. They're going to stay in the race. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I do think Milwaukee's got a much better chance than I would have expected at the start of the year. They are 36-21. You take away the Cub games, my goodness, they're 20 games over 500. So that's a look at our June 1st National League standings. We'll talk about the American League when Sean joins me next hour. All right, as we go to break, you want to hear what you created yesterday?
Sure.
We were having a little conversation about college football and how there was a high school junior that finished high school early so he could
JT Daniels
enter USC a little early, and he'll compete for the starting job this fall with the Trojans. And Eric kind of second-guessed himself, leading to a bit of chaos. So, Eric, give a listen. Here's what happened last night.
Join us weekdays at 5 for Sports Beat with Darren Pritchett, ND Insider Eric Hansen, and Sean Sires.
Will we start to see more high school players attempt to enter college early, or is this going to be a rare occurrence?
I think John David Booty might have done that for USC, if I'm not mixing up my booties, but I believe that was the case. Anyways.
That's a promo waiting to happen.
Yeah, it is a promo waiting to happen.
Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat, only on WSBT.
Anything to say for yourself?
That's awesome. That's typical me.
You know what you need to do? You need to research your booties a little more.
I do.
Because you got them maybe mixed up yesterday. And you don't want to do that. That can cause more problems. I'll leave it at that.
Oh, no.
There were two quarterbacks whose last name was Booty. So
they're brothers.
That's right. So don't go down a different path. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, gosh, what are we going to do? Oh, Tom Noy's going to join us next here on WSBT. He's Eric. I'm Darren. We're at Four Winds Field. And joining us on the phone, oh, my goodness, he is the lead columnist for the South Bend Tribune. And he is Mr. College Basketball. Can I say that, Eric? Is that okay? Is that going to lead to a raise?
You haven't.
He's Tom Noy. Can't get your tongue.
Say it.
Not that it's not deserved. It's it's kind of like when my kids used to ask me for money. It was like, from where?
Eric, let me bail you out and just say hello to Tom Noy. He joins us here on WSBT Radio. How about that introduction?
How about it? If before that, then I'm following booties and trying to follow along in the 19-inning scoreless streak or whatever the heck it was.
You got a lot going on,
baby.
You got that right. You got that right. All right, we heard the Big Ten ACC Challenge matchups. According to a source yesterday, it all became official today. And this is the sixth year for Notre Dame in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. This is their third home game, and they will take on the University of Illinois November the 27th. And going by your Twitter, I think you just about fell asleep with that announcement. So go ahead, fire away. Let's hear it. Let's hear the analysis. You're the lead columnist.
And I was told by a trusted source to deal with it. I won't name names, but yeah, I tweeted this too last night. They've been in the ACC for 6 years. They've played three teams. At this rate, Darren, they'll get through the Big Ten in 24 years. I get that it's made for TV and everything, and the marquee matchups need to remain the marquee matchups. But you got to be a little bit more creative. Like Notre Dame, before Notre Dame joined the ACC, they had never played Iowa, okay? But then they joined the ACC, and because of the ACC Big Ten Challenge and the tournament that they were in Orlando 1 year over Thanksgiving, they wound up playing Iowa three times in 4 years. And even Fran McCaffrey was like, you know, I coach at Notre Dame for 9 years, but I'm sick of Mike Bray. Like, I'm tired of seeing these guys. And that's the knock. That's the knock that I have against this. It's got nothing to do against Illinois, because when they played down at State Farm Center, they christened the new State Farm Center in 2015. And for a guy who grew up in suburban Chicago and had never been to Champaign, that was a great trip. That was Matt Farrell's coming out party as a sophomore, where he basically helped Notre Dame win that game. But it's like, no, I saw a tweet earlier today from Shannon Ryan of the Chicago Tribune that said, Notre Dame and Illinois will meet for the first time since 2015. You know, I didn't think 2015 was like last century or something. I'm bringing my A material tonight. I haven't been on in a while, so I'm fresh.
Okay, I got a two-part question. Because of the math, isn't there one team that doesn't get to play in this? And,
yes,
and the second part of the question is, would that be worse than playing Illinois again?
maybe. I mean, Notre Dame's December schedule for everything. First, I'll get to the first part. The one team that's odd, the odd team out this year that gets sent to, like, the ACC Redemption Island or whatever you want to call it, is Wake Forest. They will not participate, which is good because all indications are Wake Forest may be headed to the route of Pittsburgh last year, where they may go 0-18 or 1-17. So you don't want to play Wake Forest. But given everything Notre Dame loses on their roster this year, and trying to play it safe and saying, you know, we're going to dial back the non-conference schedule because we've got all these new guys coming in and new guys and new roles and five freshmen, and how are we going to juggle all this? Their December is shaping up to be pretty competitive and challenging when you've got Oklahoma in Madison Square Garden. 4 days later, you got to turn around and go out to Los Angeles and play UCLA. You've got to play Illinois, DePaul at home. You've got to play Purdue down at Crossroads. So for a team that said, we need to fatten up on some wins, they're challenging themselves a little bit more than what I think a lot of people expect.
Tom Noy joining us, lead columnist for the South Bend Tribune, covers the Fighting Irish basketball team. Big Ten ACC Challenge matchup is official. Illinois at Notre Dame, Purcell Pavilion, November the 27th. The start time will be announced at a later date. So let me establish this as we talk about possible opponents. We go a different direction. With the state of the Notre Dame roster, isn't it fair to say this is the year that you don't want to play Michigan State, Indiana, Purdue, Michigan? Is that fair? Coupled with everything you just said, the other teams are playing in the non-conference. Isn't this the year to avoid that type of matchup in the Big Ten ACC Challenge?
Absolutely, 130%.
Okay, because we're going to hear a lot, this is a young basketball team. That's going to be the theme of this year's team. And so there's no use over-challenging them in the Big Ten ACC Challenge when they've got Oklahoma, they've got Purdue, they've got some other matchups. So we can eliminate those four teams, fair?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you don't want to play Rutgers or somebody like that. You don't want to play Penn State. So, I mean, I'm just kind of eliminating teams. So I know Illinois isn't exactly a sexy opponent because they've missed the tournament five consecutive years. They have a really good history, but I don't think Irish fans give a darn about the history of Illinois basketball. They just know they've not been very good the last 5 years. So I don't know. I guess it comes down to this. If you're a fan, if you're a season ticket holder, do you want a better chance to win, or do you want to play a marquee opponent where you may lose? And that's what it comes down to for me. And to me, for where this roster is right now, I think they need to accumulate wins in the non-conference season. You know, I love challenging schedules, but I don't know if this team should be overly challenged in the non-conference season, knowing what's ahead in the ACC. So I think they're playing the level of opposition in terms of talent that they should be playing in this particular matchup. I guess it's up to you to pick maybe a different team that might be more sexy or someone they haven't played in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. But in terms of who they're playing, I think it's the caliber they should be playing. Can we agree there?
Yeah, and here's another aspect of that there. You just played Illinois. You played them in 2015. So it's not something new, and I think when you look at the ACC Big Ten Challenge, you want to see something different to where, they've played Illinois in that. They've played Iowa in that. They've played Michigan State. You don't want to play a marquee team because you're down. You're going to be picked somewhere 7, 8, 9, 10 range in the ACC. But there are two other teams that also fit that description of Illinois right now or going into the 2018-19 season. That would be Northwestern. That would be Northwestern with Chris Collins down after making the NCAA tournament a year before. They kind of fell off the map again. And then also Wisconsin, which I don't think has been to Notre Dame since like the 30s or something. They played a couple of years ago in the NCAA tournament, the infamous Wisconsin collapse there in the final seconds that got Notre Dame back into the Elite Eight for a second straight season. But this is another reason why it's just so goofy and just flat out dumb, because the ACC Big Ten Challenge has a quote unquote rule where they don't want to put teams on the road for 2 years in a row. So because
Correct.
Of that, Wisconsin and Northwestern both were on the road last year, so they deserve home games this year. Whereas it would have been a nice matchup had it been Northwestern with Chris Collins. There's a connection there with Mike Bray and Duke and everything, and Mike Bray and his relationship with Doug Collins. And then also Wisconsin, because you haven't played Wisconsin in the regular season far longer than what you played Illinois.
I mean, Illinois and Notre Dame used to play all the time in
they
Chicago,
did.
Which it was cool. And I've been told by a couple of Illinois media members that Illinois tried to restart that years ago, and it never got anywhere. But I think that would be fun. But, again, we're now looking at new scheduling, Tom, in the ACC and the Big Ten. They're going to play more conference games. And I am all in favor of that, because hopefully that gets rid of some of the horrible non-conference games we have to go through. So it's going to be very tough for those type of matchups to occur anymore.
It will, and it's just going to get tougher, which is one of the reasons why the ACC, during the spring meetings of the ACC, the men's basketball coaches were fully behind extending the NCAA tournament by four teams, because they're looking at that 20-game league schedule and thinking, is 10-10 going to be good enough to get us into the NCAA tournament? That you don't know. Like, if the NCAA tournament had expanded to 72 teams or four more teams this past year, Notre Dame gets in. So Mike Bray was probably firmly behind that, saying, let's expand that tournament because we're going to a 20-game league schedule, and it's going to be tough to see how the NCAA selection committee views a team that finishes with 10 league losses.
68 teams is enough.
Yeah, it is.
Darren has his disgusted look face on.
I just don't get expanding the field. We're not adding great teams. We're not adding great teams. We're adding teams that, okay, they could get hot and win two or three games, but that doesn't make you a great team. Syracuse, the prime example. Just because they won a couple of games in the tournament doesn't mean they deserve to get in. They just took advantage of the situation.
Exactly.
I'm done. Go ahead.
All right. I have I have another two-part question.
Wow.
This one is, we're talking about how young this team is going to be. So two aspects there. Is everybody going to be healthy when practice starts in October? And two, how does Juwan Durham fit into the young description? Is he young, or is he a guy that is ready to go and maybe ready to emerge as a frontline player?
Second part first. Nobody has any idea what Juwan Durham is going to be able to offer. And I think including Juwan Durham, because he was thrown into an impossible situation in his 1 year at the University of Connecticut. He was not physically or mentally ready to play college basketball. Like, he didn't know what college basketball was all about. You know, what do you do? You know, the ins and outs, the ups and downs of the game. He wasn't ready for that. He needed to transfer and start over and just take a year to kind of understand, this is the level of competition of college basketball. This is what I need to do every single day to be really good. So he was almost like starting over. He's almost like another one of the freshmen, because his year in stores was such a waste, where I think he only averaged like 3 minutes a game. He averaged a point, maybe less than one rebound a game. So he really didn't show much of anything to say, boy, he's going to get that sit-out year, and he's really going to hit the ground running when Notre Dame needs him to. Now, he'll have a chance to have an impact, because Mike Bray has said, we're just going to keep it simple with Juwan Durham. I want him to block shots, be a guy like we haven't had since Ryan Humphrey, and just rebound and defend. And maybe if you score a little bit, that's good. But be an interior presence for that basketball team, and that'll be the first step with Juwan Durham. And then you just take it from there. Whatever you get points-wise, Mike Bray will say, wow, you know what, that's a bonus for us, because we're not expecting him to be a 10-12 point a game scorer right now. And then as far as the injury situation, it's a little different this year, because everybody has to be healthy basically next month. Because they have the foreign tour, they get 10 additional practices leading into their trip of the Bahamas in August. So they get here Father's Day weekend. I believe Prentice Hubb, who basically is going to get thrown into a starting job the minute he arrives from D.C.,
wow.
he's going to get here a little early, because he had the reconstructive knee surgery on his right knee that cost him his entire senior year of high school. And Mike Bray has made it clear that, you know what, we've got to fast track this. We've got to accelerate whatever rehab program he has remaining on that reconstructive surgery, because Prentice Hubb was recruited for one reason and one reason only. When Matt Farrell graduated last month, Prentice Hubb was expected to walk right into Matt Farrell's starting spot. So he's got to be ready to go. Whether or not he is by the time the 4-2 rolls around, we don't know. But we do know, too, that DJ Harvey will not participate in the 4-2 or is not expected to participate. He may be ready for the start of practice, but he's the only guy from a health-wise situation that we know that is still kind of on the fence when everything starts rolling.
All right, my producer Jerry is going to be ticked at me because we are so late, but I got to ask one more thing because Noy got me going. I'm on my high horse now. You know, about this proposal of going to 72 teams by adding four teams, it was an ACC coaches initiative from what I understand. You know what, Tom? Put 72 teams in the field, but put in mid-majors. Put in more Missouri Valley teams. Because what does the Missouri Valley do when they go to the tournament? They win games, but they don't get the opportunity. Bradley had Loyola down in the semifinals late in the second half. If Bradley wins that game, Loyola doesn't go to the Final Four, and we don't have this story. But they rallied to win, put together a great run. A Valley team getting in is always a good thing. They always have success. I mean, Loyola... You think back to Wichita State had great success coming out of the Valley. Now they're in a different league. Northern Iowa had a win in 2016. So, you know what? Expand the field. But enough of the majors, the big boys. I mean, I'm sorry, if you can't get to 500 in your league, why are we having this conversation? I know there's differences in schedules, but you know what? You put the Valley in, they seem to win games every year. So if you're going to do that, put in some of the small guys and give them their shot.
Or if you do this, consider a team from the Power 5 conference, like an ACC school, if they've gone out and they've played a mid-major at home or on the road and have those, because the mid-majors
on
can't
the
get
road.
In because well, Notre Dame played a mid-major in Delaware. If you want to be considered, go out
credit
and play
to them.
People. Now, that's not going to happen. That's never going to happen, especially with the leagues like the ACC going to 20 league games. You're going to see less of the mid-majors getting a chance against the power conference schools. So yeah, we'll expand the tournament, but give it to the mid-majors that don't have the mid-majors that go, you know, 17-1 in their league but then get beat at the buzzer in their championship game. Give them the audit. Give them the extra bid instead of a team from the ACC that goes 9-11 in conference play. Yeah.
We are so late, Jerry.
I'm sorry.
No, it's my fault. I keep asking questions. So, Tom Noy, lead columnist for the South Bend Tribune, Mr. Notre Dame basketball, joining us here on the program. Notre Dame and Illinois, November 27th, Purcell Pavilion. Be there. Aloha. I'll see you there.
You got it, my man.
Thanks, Tom, for doing this. Appreciate it.
Have a good one, guys.
There you go. He's earned his raise. That was fantastic. Tom Noy.
Will you style your hair like the Ludo for that game?
Goodness. That's impossible to duplicate, let me tell you. We're back in a moment. My five questions. They will jam it in next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
The five Irish freshmen who have the best chance to leave the Notre Dame football program early for the NFL draft. So we're talking 3 years down the line. We begin with number five.
Yeah, and I'm not factoring in what, you know, if they want to get their degree or whatever. This is just based on talent. I'm going to go with, and ceiling, I'm going to go with Derek Allen at number five. And I think he's one that his dad would probably kill him if he left early. But he's a big safety, very athletic. I think at some point he might turn into a linebacker like Jorn Jenmark Heath. And, you know, you have this super, super fast linebacker. I think he's athletic. And if he stays at safety, man, he's a big safety. So Derek Allen makes number five.
Number four.
Going to go with Jason Adamolola. He is so athletic for an interior defensive lineman. You know, he's probably about 280 right now. I think by the time he leaves Notre Dame, he'll be 300 with great movement. Those are the kind of guys that get lured into the NFL draft early.
Number three,
Shane Simon, the Rover. Again, going to be a NFL linebacker, has all the athleticism, really cerebral kid too.
Number two,
Houston Griffith.
Hello.
The safety who has cornerback speed. That's a pretty nice blend right there. And, you know, the fact he went to IMG and didn't stay in Chicago kind of shows you what he's thinking about in terms of the NFL.
And the Notre Dame freshman who has the best chance to leave early for the NFL draft.
Mike Varell just went over to Pittsburgh to interview him for our magazine, and it's Phil Jurkovic, and he is a beast. He is probably going to show up to Notre Dame in a couple weeks at 230 pounds and ripped.
That's the My Five question of the day. Now let's find out what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Tom has a column on Penn softball pitcher Anna Gustafson, who was injured most of the year. High school golf sectional, we have a winner, and it was Penn. State track meet, lots of locals competing down there. Recruiting notebook from Tyler in South Bend St. Joe in the state tennis tournament. Much, much more.
Thank you, sir. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you.
He's Eric. I'm Darren. Sean joins me in a moment. It is the top of the hour at 96.1 WSBT South Bend, the sports leader.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
608 at WSBT. Sean and Darren with you. Sean back at our studios. I'm with the South Bend Cubs at Four Winds Field. The Cubs and Lake County open up a three-game series tonight in downtown South Bend. First pitch, 7:35, pregame at 7:20 on 96.1 WSBT. We're talking NBA Finals. We'll take a look at the MLB standings on June 1st in the American League. Rapid fire into the program. A.J. Pollock interview will be replayed. He recently joined Sean and Sharpley on Leprechaun Lunch. So you will hear from the Notre Dame baseball star and now an all-star outfielder for the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's all coming up. Plus, we want to remind you, special programming tomorrow from LaPorte, Indiana, as Sean will have the call of the Class 4A regional matchup between Penn and Mishawaka. And I guess you're assuming maybe right around the 2 o'clock on-air pregame show start, I guess, somewhere around in there, depending on the first game.
That's what we're thinking. High school baseball games are obviously 7 innings, and Mishawaka and Penn play the second game. There's a game before it that will start at around 11:30 a.m. Eastern time between Lake Central and Chesterton. So you figure hour 45, 2 hours for that game, and then there is a 50-minute gap in between games. So I'm guessing they're going to let them take infield, outfield, and then drag the field and all that stuff, and that's why there's so much time. So 50 minutes in between games. I don't see us getting started much before 2 o'clock Eastern time. So.
Okay, so that's coming up tomorrow over in LaPorte.
Yeah.
We know Penn has been a powerhouse for many years, winning a state championship recently, knocking on the door other times. They won 21 in a row. But Mishawaka has played great baseball as of late. You had a chance to talk to their coach a little bit. So what are the feelings of the Cavemen going into this matchup against their rival?
I think the biggest thing that they're gaining a little confidence with their own hot streak going on, the fact that they've won 13 out of 15 and winning sectionals last week. One of the biggest things, though, is they were able, in their three games, in their three sectional wins last week, they were able to, well, they trailed early in all three games, and they came from behind, so that gave them some confidence. But they also took advantage of some mistakes by their other opponents in those games. And one of the games, I think it was LaPorte, committed 6 errors in that game, and Mishawaka ended up winning 2-0. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot no matter what level you're at. But the thing that John Hummer, the Mishawaka coach, just kept hitting home when I talked to him yesterday was, Penn doesn't beat themselves. They don't make many mistakes. That's
right.
One of the hallmarks of Penn is they're very fundamentally sound, both on the mound, in the field, and at the plate as well. So they don't make many mistakes. So it's going to be a little bit different story. They have to keep being aggressive. They're a good base running team, aggressive base running team. They lost a 6-5 game the last time they played Penn earlier this year, so they were right in there with them. But they just know Penn's not going to beat themselves. They're going to have to go out and make their own opportunities tomorrow.
Okay, Penn and Mishawaka live on WSBT Radio tomorrow afternoon right around 2 o'clock with, I guess, the spot of the regional championship game.
Yep.
On the line between the Kingsmen and the Cavemen. Looking forward to that. And then we'll have South Bend Cubs baseball later that night at 7:05 South Bend and Lake County. Unless you guys go deep into extra innings, yeah, I guess. I don't know what we're going to do. We haven't talked about that.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
All right. So looking forward to that broadcast tomorrow. Sean will have the call here on WSBT Radio. I guess we can just transition right into the June 1st Major League Baseball standings, as this is one of those days you take a look at the standings. We're past the small sample size stage of the Major League Baseball season. Eric and I touched on the National League in the first hour. Let's take a look at the America League. We'll start in the East, where a couple of the big boys right now are at the top of the standings. Boston 39-18, best record in the junior circuit. They lead the Yankees by a game and a half. They are 35-17. Tampa Bay 28-27. Toronto fading. Baltimore faded from opening day pretty much. They're 21.5 games out of first place. Holy cow. So I think it's fair to say we don't have to get into a deep conversation. Boston and New York are going to be just fine. And Tampa Bay, are they a team we should consider for the wild card? I mean, they're in the conversation. They're 5.5 back. So are we going to push the Tampa Bay Rays into that conversation, or are they exceeding their talent level, I would say, at this time?
I think, for two questions there. First, I do think they're exceeding their talent level. So how long can they keep that up, especially when you look at the opener with Sergio Romo in a couple of games and all these different things, and they had Evaldi come back off the DL, and he was pitching well through six innings. They took him out after six hitless innings. But how long can they keep that up? But at the same time, I mean, when you look at the rest of the American League, they look like they could stay in contention for a wild card spot for a while, because Seattle out in the West is 34-22, mm-hmm. But how long are they going to keep that up with no Robinson Cano, with him being out for 80 games?
They're getting good starting pitching right now, but yes, Seattle is the second wild card. They're 5.5 ahead of Tampa Bay.
Right.
I think Tampa Bay is a nice story, but they're not going to be a factor in this whole equation. It'll come down to the Red Sox and the Yankees, and I just don't see Tampa Bay hanging around in that wild card conversation. In the West, Houston only a game lead over Seattle. The Angels are now 5.5 back. So those three teams, I think we both agree Houston will be a playoff team. Are we going to bank on Seattle and the Angels staying in this conversation?
That's what I don't know. That's what we got to
figure
out. If not
them, who? That's the problem,
yeah,
you know?
I mean, when you look at Houston, It's just unfair what they're doing with their pitching right now. Their rotation is so good that Dallas Keuchel is the worst starting pitcher with a 3.65 ERA. He's 3-7, but they've scored one run three different times and got shut out another time in his four losses. And it kind of goes back to what you talk about all the time. That record means nothing. But their pitching, I mean, they're just running away with it right now. But those and that's why, when you look at Seattle and the Angels, that's why I kind of say, I mean, how real are they? You're right, Seattle's getting good pitching. The Angels, I really don't know what to expect of them. And that's why I kind of look at Tampa Bay, and you're probably right, they probably won't be in there. But, I mean, why not?
The process of elimination,
based on who their competition
is.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. Well, you kind of figured Minnesota would be there, but they're kind of buried right now at 22-30.
Yeah,
they are 6.5 behind Cleveland. And, Sean, they're 10 games out of the wild card, and they've got a bunch of teams to jump. to get back into it. Now, they've only played 52 games. They have 110 games left. But they're not making a whole lot of progress. They've taken a step back. They have lost three in a row. They are 3-7 in their last 10. So that opens the door for Seattle or the Angels to possibly be that wild card. I just can't imagine a wild card team's going to come out of the Central. Detroit's in second right now in the division, but they're 26-30. Looking at their schedule, they have not played many of the upper echelon teams as of yet, so that could be a factor. That'll send them in a different direction probably in the standings. Cleveland's won six in a row, so they're up to 30-25. They're going to win the division. But it sure looks like the East and the West are going to have the wild card teams. It's just which team is it going to be in the West, Seattle or the Angels? And you know what? I should mention Oakland. They're 29-28. They're only a game behind the Angels for third place, which brings us kind of anticlimactically to the American League Central. I mean, of the six divisions, I think there's absolutely no drama in this division.
No, you're exactly right. Cleveland is sitting there five games above 500. Everyone else is below 500. And again, that kind of goes back to that wild card. It's like everybody but the Indians are eliminated in the Central. Toronto and Baltimore are pretty much out of it in the East, and Oakland and Texas out in the West. I mean, that is, Cleveland's going to win the AL Central. It's a matter of can they get things clicking and really on track as this summer goes on to be a legit contender by the time the playoffs roll around. Because, I mean, and then I look back at the East again, and Boston's in first place right now, but Bovada actually released its odds for teams winning the World Series today. I saw this just a couple of hours ago. The Astros have the best odds at 9-2. The Yankees, who are sitting in second place in the East, are 5-1. And then it's followed by the Nationals, Brewers, Indians. The Cubs have the seventh best odds. But so the Red Sox, which has, are they the best in baseball right now? They are, yeah, the best in baseball right now, first place in the AL East, and they're not even in the top seven in terms of the odds to win the World Series. I mean, you'll go back to their pitching, Chris Sale, 2.76 ERA, Rick Porcello, 3.65, and then David Price and Eduardo Rodriguez are next, right around four, and I just think, just like they've been the last few years, I think the Red Sox are a regular season team, and I just don't know that that staff is built to win in the postseason.
This is actually a conversation for another day, but isn't it interesting how, for how many years, everything in baseball was centered around the Cubs and their young players and what they were going to be able to accomplish? They win the World Series, and it just feels like they have been replaced in the Major League Baseball narrative
by
a whole bunch of teams. It's like the Cubs have lost everybody, and nobody talks about them anymore. It's now the Astros winning the World Series. And now we talk about how the Brewers have made this big push with all their young players. And you got Atlanta with their young players. In fact, there was an MLB Network intentional talk question. Who has a bigger upside, Atlanta or the Cubs? And Ron Darling, a former Major League pitcher, took the Braves. And it's like all of a sudden the Cubs are like old news to a lot of people.
On the scrappy.
It's like we've forgotten about them. It's really surprising because it's still a really good team. Now the starting pitching, you know, they've got some guys doing great things, but Darvish and Chatwood, you never know what you're going to get when they go out there. But maybe we can talk about this another day, but I just heard you talking about the Cubs being seventh in line.
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost hard to believe because they still have the same talent for the most part from 2 years ago, and now they're just kind of stale old news. I'm not sure how that happens.
Yeah, I mean, other than Machado and a couple other storylines, really nobody has talked about the Cubs very much this year.
It's weird.
It is. It is. And again, they've got all these under 30 guys, a lot of the same guys. And they're starting to do some better things. Like last night, they actually got a runner home from third base with less than two outs. And Jason Hayward managed to do it with an RBI ground out. Just little things like that is what's going to make that offense click. And again, like you look at their lineup, and it's mostly the same guys from the team that won a World Series just less than 2 years ago.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, you know what? Nothing wrong with being so-called under the radar.
Yeah, I guess not.
Not a bad thing at all. All right, let's move along to the NBA Finals last night. Game one, the Warriors ended up beating the Cavaliers by 10 in overtime, 124-114. But what a wild last minute of the game. You had the charge block call change in favor of the Warriors with Kevin Durant driving down the lane. LeBron James at first had taken a charge, overturned to a block call. The Cavs were up by two at that moment, so that's a huge change. And it actually is an NBA rule. Inside of 2 minutes, you can go to the monitor to talk about if a player was inside that restrictive area. And there was no doubt LeBron was not even close to that area.
Yeah.
But they decided to overturn the call, which is interesting. Then with seconds left in the game tied, missed free throw, J.R. Smith of the Cavs grabs the rebound and runs out. There were 4.7 seconds on the clock. He basically runs out 3.5 seconds off that clock. He brought the ball out front. Now, he says he knew the game was tied, but it sure doesn't seem like it. He had a four-footer, and he brought it outside, so that was strange. And then the Warriors took over in overtime. So here's my question to you. Who should LeBron James, who had 51 points, be more mad at, J.R. Smith or the officials?
Oh, man. I think I hate to blame the officials, but it was not a very well-officiated game last night. And you look at that play specifically, they're only that block charge, they're only supposed to be able to go to the replay, as you said, if there's a question of if the player is in that restricted area. And he was a good, 2 feet, a foot and a half, 2 feet outside that restricted area. There shouldn't have even been a question. And so because they were looking at that, then that then allows them to change the call from charge to block. And so, I mean, if that call's not overturned, it probably goes the other way. Cleveland wins last night. They don't even go to overtime.
Well, there are a lot of plays in the game that change the complexion of the contest, and we talk about this a lot during Notre Dame football games. You cannot just blame the outcome of a game on one official's call. Now, from what I understand, it was a poorly officiated game. That is a huge call. I think it makes it more interesting. The game's best player had the call go against him. Now, Kevin Durant's in the top five. He might be number two. But I think it's interesting that it was LeBron James who did not get the benefit of the doubt from the officiating crew. Now, this is kind of unfair, but I'll ask it anyway. If it is Sean Livingston driving down the paint, and it's the same play with LeBron James, do you think the call's different? Is it different because it was Kevin Durant compared to Sean Livingston?
Very good question. I mean, you've got,
I think it might be,
two of the top three, at least, players going head-to-head. You're right. What kind of amazed me, listening to some of the national talk this morning, is the talk about conspiracy against Cleveland, that the league would want Golden State to win that game. To me, I mean, if there was a conspiracy, wouldn't you think it would have been the other way? I mean, if you want this to be a series, just based on how everything has gone to this point, if there was going to be a conspiracy, you would have thought that that call would have stayed with Cleveland and LeBron. So I thought that was very curious that there was that kind of talk.
Yeah, if you're going to be a conspiracist, then yes, you would say that you would want Cleveland to win, because that adds more drama to the series. Because what was it at the start of the series? You put down $1,100 on the Warriors, and if they win the championship, you get $100.
Yeah.
So they're an overwhelming favorite to win the finals. So, yeah, I don't get the conspiracy theorists saying they want Golden State to win. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, LeBron scores 51. First player to score 50 points in a final game, and his team loses. And again, a Superman effort. He has his guards. That's probably the missing link in the conversation. The Cleveland guards were not very good last night, and George Hill missed the free throw leading to the
Cleveland
J.R.
has
Smith
guards
play. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. How about the fact they brought up highlights from the Knicks? He did the same thing in a game years ago with the Knicks. He thought that the Knicks were behind when the game was tied and took a quick shot with under 24 seconds left after the shot clock reset so they could have ran the clock down and taken the final shot. Instead, he missed, and the opposition went down and scored and won the game. So this isn't the first time, but he continues to claim he knew the game was tied.
There's no way.
I just can't believe.
No way.
He says that he thought somebody was going to call timeout. You were 4 feet from the basket in the paint, and he dribbles to the front court. I mean, he had LeBron James wide open at the top of the key if he wanted to pass the basketball right. initially. He didn't do it, so I don't know how any of us can believe that J.R. Smith thought that the game was tied. He had to have thought that Cleveland was ahead, and it's one of those
like,
things.
It looked like if you tried to read his lips, that's what he was saying. I thought we were ahead.
He just needs to come clean. You know, simple as that.
You know what the finals really misses, though, with ESPN, ABC, the Disney doing the games, is they miss the TNT crew with Kenny Smith and Charles and Shaq. I mean, they would have just that would have been the most entertaining thing. And I during the playoffs with my son home, we sit there and with the Western games. When those guys were doing it, we'd sit there, and it's so entertaining. I don't understand. I don't know if there's a contract that says they can't do it, you know, even in the studio, but I don't understand why they don't do their own post-game or pre-game or whatever, because it's so much more entertaining watching and listening to those guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is going to be tough on the Cavs. Maybe it's good news they don't play again until Sunday. It's going to take a little while to flush what happened, the charge block call, the J.R. Smith play, and then just falling apart in overtime. Honestly, going back to the block charge, I thought it was 50-50.
Yeah, it was.
I think the problem is LeBron fell not straight back, and normally that's a small indicator if you're set. Not always the case, but he fell to the side, and I think it makes it look a little different. I still think it's 50-50. I don't think it was definitely a block or definitely a charge. It was truly one of those judgment calls that could have went either way. When I first saw it, my first reaction was block.
Yeah, me too. And regardless of how it was called, it's, if you can think about it, inconclusive, as we hear in football all the time. I don't know how you overturn it one way or another, because whatever it was originally called probably should have been stuck with.
Without a doubt. All right, game two Sunday. Warriors up 1-0. A missed opportunity for the underdog Cavaliers. We'll take a timeout. Rapid fire coming up next on WSBT. Abby, thank you. 6:34 at WSBT. Sean and Darren on Sports Beat on this beautiful Friday in downtown South Bend. Cubs and Captains. First pitch tonight at 7:35. Pregame at 7:20 on WSBT Radio. And don't forget tomorrow at 2, 4A, high school baseball regional action from LaPorte, Penn versus Mishawaka. Sean will be on the call of that game. And now he hosts Rapid Fire.
Fill in the blank, Darren, on this first question. Outside of the quarterback, your offensive X-factor player for Notre Dame this season is blank.
Oh. Well, getting this quickly, an answer to you, I immediately thought of two names.
Okay.
And I'm thinking Chase Claypool and Dexter Williams. And I'm going to say Claypool, because if he can be the wide receiver we saw in the spring game, it opens up everybody else on this offense. So I will say, even though he's been a starter, and I hate making a starter an X factor, but I think if we can see his level of play become more consistent and more dominant, it's going to help everybody else on the football team.
And that's a good point, because there's still, while he might have been a starter, there's still a ton of upside for Chase Claypool.
Right.
And he's one of the first names that kind of popped into my mind as well. I thought about him, maybe Miles Boykin, but none of the receivers were putting up huge numbers last year, and they still won 10 games. So it's interesting you said Dexter Williams, because there's still all this kind of floating around out there with these different rumors, and maybe we'll be able to put an end to that sometime soon and get something definitive on what's going on with Dexter Williams. But if any of that is true, I'm going with the other running back and say Tony Jones Jr., because, you know, you've obviously got Adams gone, McIntosh gone, so they lose 1,800 rushing yards. Jones was never really healthy last year, and he is so versatile if he's able to stay healthy. And again, if there's anything going on with Dexter Williams, then you're going to need Tony Jones Jr. even more, whether it's running the ball, catching the ball, blitz pickup, all that different kind of stuff. So I'm going with Tony Jones Jr.
Can't disagree with that. It's got to be one of the running backs. One of those two
is
going to have to play at a high level. I know the coaching staff believes both can. Yep. So I think they can both play winning football. Can they play championship football?
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Yu Darvish says Cubs fans hate him because he's on the disabled list. Do you buy or sell that?
Well, I mean, some will, some won't. And I think any time you get a contract the size of what Darvish got,
mm-hmm.
and you've been on the disabled list twice, one time it was the flu, but it sure seemed like it might have been a mental break for Darvish.
Now he's on the DL
with a tricep. I could understand probably Darvish, who is from another country, may not be used to the scrutiny. It's one thing to be a Texas Ranger. Now, he was a Dodger last year, but things went pretty well there, except for the World Series. So I can understand you being a little extra sensitive right now, because the Cubs are still in really good shape. They're not out of anything, but they're not where I think their fans expected them to be. They didn't expect them to be four games behind the Brewers. So I'm sure there are a certain number of fans are very uneasy about Darvish. And again, I go back to, you asked the question, Darvish or Arrieta? I said neither one. Now, Arrieta looks like a great choice right now with like a 2.15 ERA.
Yeah.
But I was not a fan of the Darvish signing, so I can understand Cub fans being a little frustrated, and you spend $150 million on a guy that A, can't stay healthy, and B, can't get through the fifth inning.
And that's, see, I think it's more, one, the contract, the fact that he signed that big contract, maybe two, the fact that he's the guy they got instead of Arrieta, and Arrieta's doing well, and then you factor those things in with the fact that he's just not performing. If he even had a 3.5 ERA instead of just under 5 right now, and even 3 wins instead of 1, I think it'd be different. So I don't think it's his. I think the disabled list is maybe the straw that broke the camel's back. I think it's more you signed him to all this money and you're not performing. That's why fans, I think, are more upset than just being on the disabled list.
Well, that is money given to a guy that can be an ace.
Yeah.
And he is far from that right now. So I can understand the frustration. I mean, the Cubs have spent a lot of money in a couple of places that haven't necessarily totally worked out. Hayward's hitting better right now, but a lot of money went into his pockets, and you just were not expecting him to hit 230, 240. He was going to play great defense and run the base as well, but you don't spend $200 million on a guy for defense and base running, despite what the analytics people will tell you.
I agree. We already talked some of the NBA finals, so I want to get some hockey in here for you tonight, Darren.
All
Washington
right.
beat Vegas 3-2 Wednesday to even the Stanley Cup final at a game apiece. So game 3 is tomorrow in Washington. Is there any reason to believe the Cavs can beat the still heavily favored Golden Knights in this series?
I mean, at the start of the year, the start of the series, I took the Cavs in 6. So I think they're still the better team.
Okay.
And, you know, they played pretty well. Vegas did a nice job at home, but I still think there's a lot of firepower on that Washington team. And I'm still very confident that Holtby can do the job between the pipes. At the start of the playoffs, there was a talk whether he should be the starter or not, and he has done a great job for the Capitals. So I still think they have a little more talent, maybe a bit more balanced. Vegas has played the best throughout the postseason, but I just take a look at who Washington beat to get to the final. They beat a couple of teams that very easily could have won the Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay. So I'm still feeling really good about Washington. I'll stand by the prediction. And I still think Washington, on their home ice in Game 6, will win their first Stanley Cup.
Okay. All right. Interesting. And I think the fact that Vegas goalie Marc-Andre Fleury, he didn't give up much through the first 3 rounds of the playoffs. He's already given up 7 goals in the first 2 games. So I, from my layman's perspective, I think that it has to mean something. The fact that Washington has been able to score so much the first couple games. And so that's the thing that stands out to me, that I would seem to think Washington will have a chance.
Yeah, it's a unique final just because Washington had better teams the last 2 years, but this is the team that got to the final. I mean, the last 2 years, you could argue they were the best team in the regular season, President Trophy winners. Couldn't beat Pittsburgh. They got by Pittsburgh. They got by a really good Tampa Bay team, so this just might be their year. And Las Vegas, those bookies are praying the Capitals are going to win because Las Vegas is going to take a hit if the Knights win the Cup, considering it was 500-1 odds at the start of the year that they would win the Stanley Cup.
Yep. A couple quick questions for you here before we wrap up rapid fire. One, a goose on the field delayed a game in Detroit a little bit the other night. What's the strangest delay you've ever had while calling a game? Have you had any?
Can it be hockey?
Sure.
We were at Northeastern probably 3 years ago, I'm going to guess. And they have a very old hockey building. There's a lot of tradition. The first Boston Bruins game was played there. The Celtics used to play there. So it's a really cool old building. And at the conclusion of the first period, we were scoreless. And the Zamboni mechanically broke down on the ice during the intermission, getting the ice ready. And unfortunately, I feel for the Zamboni driver. He kind of panicked. He never shut off the blades underneath the Zamboni. And it just dug huge holes in the ice. And they tried to fix it. They did their best, but we ended up having to postpone the game, and we never made it up. It ended up just being a tie. But had the guy turned off the blades, we probably could have played. But somehow the Zamboni ended up getting stuck, too, after he kept the blades going and going. I guess the blades were way down on the ice, and I'm assuming the ice, I guess, kind of froze around the blade. And so it actually took a long time to get that Zamboni off the ice before they tried to fix the ice. So off the top of my head, that's probably the strangest incident I've had in a game.
That would be strange, and you obviously don't expect a hockey game to have a delay, especially like that. Mine was baseball, Notre Dame baseball, several years back, probably 10 or 11 years ago, something like that. A rabbit ran out on the field, and he kind of started zigging and zagging and then zipped his way across the outfield. They were kind of trying to corral the rabbit in the outfield. It wasn't a long delay, but it was kind of like the goose, just long enough that you got to get him contained and get him off the field. So it was a rabbit delay at Frank Eck Stadium. That was the strangest one I've had.
That's strange. Well, for people that missed it at Comerica Park, it was just one of those things where they tried to get the goose off the field. It started flying up, and I guess there was a blue ad up on one of the banner boards attached to the facade of the upper deck, and I just wonder if they thought it was Sky because it ran right into that blue and fell down into the box seats. And strangely enough, there was a vet close by. She told the ushers, "I'm a vet, let me get down there," and she actually took care of the goose and threw out the first pitch last night for the Tigers-Angels game. But that was bizarre. I mean, that goose hit that banner board absolutely hard. I think it was a little woozy for a tad bit.
I think you're right. All right, that's all we've got for rapid fire.
All right, it is 15 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We'll continue with more Sports Beat coming up in just a moment from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Abby, thank you. Sports Beat continues on WSBT Radio at 647. Former Irish baseball player A.J. Pollock, now 30 years old, a member of the Arizona Diamondbacks, currently on the DL with a fractured thumb. Recently, he was on WSBT Radio's Leprechaun Lunch with Sean Stiers and Evan Sharpley.
A.J. Pollock is with us, former Notre Dame baseball player, current Arizona Diamondback. And I guess we should talk about your health a little bit here, A.J. Unfortunately, you got off to a great start to the season. That was the good news. But then just a little bit more than a week ago, suffered a thumb injury on a play in the outfield. Kind of go through that play, first of all. Do you remember exactly what happened?
Yeah, just playing how I usually play. It was kind of those 50-50 chance balls, and team wasn't really playing well, and I just thought I could give us some energy and try to make a play, and some got caught under me, and It's part of the game. It sucks, but it's really part of the game. You know, the other part of the game is the long season. You just got to rehab and get back as fast as you can, and that's what I'm doing right now.
4 to 8 weeks was the original diagnosis. How's it doing right now, and what's your hopeful timeline to be back out there?
Well, I have an x-ray coming up soon. Yeah, I mean, I'd be really upset if I didn't hit that four-week mark. So, I mean, that's the goal. And if I could shave off some from the 4 weeks, that'd be great too. But we'll see. You know, I want to push as much as I can and get back out there. You know, it's never fun watching your team go out there and play, and you have to sit back and watch it on TV. So it's definitely boring, but you know, it's also another game within the game is kind of that mindset and working hard and trying to get back from an injury. So it is what it is.
AJ, I want to talk a little bit about kind of the progression of your swing. You know, I was able to see your growth at the college level, and you've certainly seen some great success here in the MLB as well. Talk us through just a little bit on kind of how your swing has progressed, evolved. I know the mental side is always been really important to you as well, but kind of talk us through your approach and your swing and how it's evolved since you become a pro player.
Yeah, well, it's definitely evolved, that's for sure. Just a lot of resources I've been, you know, able to stumble upon, and different guys, different philosophies, and I'm pretty open-minded, you know, so I definitely stay open to stuff, and, you know, I think it's evolved from kind of really just this really stagnant, kind of stiff, kind of mechanical-looking swing to more of a fluid swing that has a little more moving parts, a little more athleticism, I'd say, in it. And then the swing path, I mean, that's what everyone's talking about, you know, how to have the optimal swing path to give yourself the best chance to hit. And, you know, different guys are going to have different philosophies on it. My philosophy actually has kind of switched over time, and I guess right now I just believe in basically getting on plane as deep as possible and staying through the ball and long through the zone as long as possible. You know, being very north and south is kind of how we talk about it. You know, basically just right at the pitcher, you know, as long through the zone as possible. That puts you on a lot of different speeds, puts you on a lot of different movement with the fastball and slider. And so that's kind of a dulled down version of my philosophy on the swing, and I guess I believe in too, just never really, always trying to learn, always trying to get better, always trying to experiment and explore some certain areas you can get better at, and that's where I'm at right now.
I'm interested, AJ, at my facility here, just outside of Notre Dame, we use a lot of technology. We use a blast motion sensor where we're getting the feedback on swing path, miles per hour on your swing. We're looking at time to contact. How much of tech and data do you look at, or are you kind of more of a broad kind of philosophical, and use some of those terms too, of getting on plane and getting in the zone deep, but are you guys looking at specific numbers as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think all that stuff is great tools. You know, I look for any kind of feedback I can get. I think in the season, I'm more of a feel. I'm definitely looking, you know, I've hit so many baseballs, and you can test this, and you kind of have to feel how the ball is coming off. You know, it'd be nice to get a reading every now and then, but I think it's definitely more feel. I think we have a lot more technology now for scouting reports on pitchers, and I mean, that's a different story. That's pretty detailed. You know, we're talking about everyone's fastballs. Not everyone's fastball is the same. You know, it's from a different arm slot. It kind of has a little bit of a rise feel because of he's throwing from lower, or hey, this ball's got a lot of vertical drop. I mean, there's a lot of technical stuff that I never, you know, 5 years ago, even when I was a rookie in the game, I never thought I'd be talking about now. But, you know, that's pretty much where the game is now in the MLB, is just, you know, so much data on what the pitcher's ball is doing. And, you know, when you talk about swing path and the stuff you're talking about, it all correlates, too. You have a different drop on the ball for a fastball, and certain swing paths will match that up better. And maybe you can kind of tinker with your swing path a little bit in order to get on plane a little better. It just gives you the idea of, you know, not having the same swing on every pitcher because every pitcher is different. So you kind of have to know how to manipulate that from pitch to pitch. Might be a little detail, but, I mean, that's kind of where it's at. And the best hitters will be able to make that adjustment, you know, when they bring in a reliever that's throwing, you know, 96 with a lot of spin rate or a guy that's kind of having a lot of sink. I mean, it's all different. And that's the tricky part of the game, is to be able to make that adjustment and using the data right there.
We're joined by A.J. Pollock, who played with Evan Sharpley, played on the Notre Dame baseball team 2007 to 2009, of course, now with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And some of that stuff you're touching on, A.J., we're in an era right now where it seems like everything is either a home run, a strikeout, or a walk. But when you look at the stats that you've compiled, you don't seem to kind of fall into that category. So with some of the stuff that you touched on there and just your overall approach, why do you think that you're able to kind of buck that current trend?
I mean, I guess it's just kind of knowing what the game is going to ask you to do. Not being so bottled down to one philosophy, but it's definitely a game where, I mean, home runs are obviously, everyone realizes how important they are. Doubles, triples, RBIs, huge. And I think what's happening, too, is, you know, most teams are trying to strike guys out. You know, that's their philosophy. They don't want balls put in play at all. So, you know, they don't have to have guys go past the fifth inning. So it's really just kind of understanding what's going on. And, you know, I think as a hitter, when you understand what they're trying to do to you, you know, it's a little easier to make those adjustments. And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of times the game does call for put the ball in play or shorten up or, you know, try to get on top. You know, instead of having just that one groove swing, you got to be able to try to do other stuff as well when it's called for.
AJ, we're seeing, you know, pitchers, they're overall throwing a lot harder now. And you mentioned spin rate and how that affects movement. You're watching guys like Jordan Hicks throw 105, or you've got 102 mile an hour. They're terming it a sinker. You're seeing how much movement is created. Who's been the toughest pitcher you've faced so far in your career?
Man, there's a lot of good ones. I think the traditional guys that are considered the best, you know, Scherzer, Kershaw. I mean, those guys are always, I mean, they're not really tricking you that much. They just are disgusting. Fastball has got so much life. Their slider. I mean, they have every pitch they throw is a plus pitch, and then their deliveries, deceptive. So to me, those are the guys. I mean, for Faze Verlander this year, he was outstanding. Garrett Cole is a new guy that, you know, he's learned a lot of the data that the Astros work with, and I think that's taken him to a good level. So there's a lot of good ones out there, and it's a hard game, that's for sure.
I got to ask one thing. Is the humidor for real?
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I don't want to get. I don't want some headlines here, but yeah, of course it's when you have a park that, you know, everyone thinks is a hitter's park, and it, you know, it always has been. You know, I guess from the data will show you that it hasn't been as much of a hitter's park as you think over the years. But, you know, hitters never complain. But now you have balls that are, you know, we're realizing how big our park is. You know, it's 413 feet to right center and left center, and then we have a 30-foot high wall, and now you're 30-foot high wall in center, and now you're sticking balls in the humidor. It's definitely having an effect on the game. I think, you know, it's affecting both teams, obviously, but, man, it's definitely had a huge effect on what the ball's doing out there. I know the pitchers are loving it. hitters, not so much.
A.J. Pollock, Notre Dame star, now with Arizona. 2 weeks ago, suffered a fracture to the left thumb. He had new x-rays taken on Tuesday, and as expected, the healing continues. The club will continue to play the waiting game. Troy Lovello, the manager of Arizona, said, quote, "It's still not totally healed, but it's exactly where we thought it would be. We're going to continue to do the therapy and try to get him back on his feet as soon as possible," end quote. The initial thought was he would miss 4 to 8 weeks, and right now Pollock remains in his soft cast. Hope to see Pollock back on the diamond very soon. Final timeout coming up right now on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's weekday sports beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org and the Blackthorn card. Buy it right now at Blackthorn Golf Club for $99. It'll get you up to 80% off the regular rate at Blackthorn. It is the top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.